This is the Valley Outdoors, brought to you by us. That's right, we're here. We are Don. You are Don. Ava. Morning.
Good morning.
Ah, and me. I'm Eric. We are here. We got a good show coming up. I'm pretty excited, Don. We're going to talk a little bit about North Dakota fishing season. We're going to talk about a new state record in Montana. And those western areas are coming out with some big fish, my friend.
They just keep happening, don't they?
Over and over and over. Lots of good stories and us when the Valley Outdoors returns. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Welcome back, everybody. Glad to be hanging out with everyone.
Yeah.
Good to see you, Don.
It's good to be seen.
Ava?
It is good to be seen.
I have to tell you guys, we had a good week out fishing on the river, even though the water's low. We have a league fishing night that we have on Wednesday in the middle of the week, and had a great, great day fishing out there. It was just awesome. Record number of sheephead. I mean, I bet we caught probably 100 sheephead between three of us.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was,
how fortunate.
Your arm got a little tired at the end of the day because there's some trash can lids out there. Let me tell you right now. You get a couple 22-inch sheephead.
You know you got something on the end of your line.
And it's fun, though, when you feel that doink on the end of the rod. It's like that jig fishing is just great. We were just using hair jigs, and wow, it was fantastic. We did get some nice walleyes. We got a 27, we got a 25, 24, 23 and a half, 21, 20 and a half. So, yeah, it was a good afternoon.
Fun day.
On the water, yeah, it was a lot of fun. So, fish are starting to go, but they're scattered. The water's low. You know, everybody say, boy, they're, you know, the water's low, so they got to be condensed. No, they're all over the channel. They're everywhere. So, one of the deceptions kind of goes into that side of the fence, so makes it different. But
they do like to move around.
You know, and the
especially
fun part,
in a river.
Well, yeah, and the fun part was it kind of feeds into the tip of the week. You know, a lot of us go out species specific, and it's kind of fun. I used to be just, let's go out and just, we got to find walleyes. But the fun part is it going out and trying to find smallmouth and trying to find pike and trying to find some other species in the same trip is really kind of a challenge in and of itself too. So
if that's what your goal is, most of the time that happens accidentally. You're fishing for walleyes, you pick up a smallie if you're on a reef or a
it does
you.
Yeah,
and a lot of times that's the case.
That's what fun it's fun to target species for that.
Yep.
So it was really an enjoyable thing. So you know, when you're going out and you're looking at taking kids fishing or somebody that's not experienced, obviously, you want to get them action. And if there's somebody who wants to learn how to jig fish, now's the time to go to the river and teach them how to jig fish, because you're going to catch sheephead no matter what you do. And it really a good way to learn that
technique.
Feel.
Yep.
My statement's always to people that aren't experienced, the hook sets are free.
Right.
And they are, without question. So it's really one of those things where when you go out, just don't think about one species. Go have some fun. Enjoy the outdoors. Enjoy the water. But play around. Have a little fun experiment, and you're going to learn some things.
Well, I'm hoping next week I can maybe visit with you from the water like we did here about a year ago.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
And the water is going to be?
North of here.
You see how he does that?
Yeah. Secrets.
Yeah.
Secret,
he wants me to tell him my
no
fishing
fun.
Spots, and then he doesn't want to say where
I don't
want
to know your fishing spots.
Yeah, right. See? No, he doesn't want to know.
Uh-huh.
He's trying to play that reverse psychology on me.
Right.
Not going to work.
He wants me to know where they're at. And
nope.
No, I don't want to know.
No.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
All right.
Because then his statement was, if I tell him and he doesn't go there, and somebody else is going to be on the spot, then I'll be mad at him.
Right. See how he plays?
You know, the look on Ava's face right now is truly priceless.
Yeah.
It's like, boys.
Yeah.
Boys, stop it. Oh, well, what are you going to do? Story, kind of fun. Things that make you go, hmm?
Yep.
We actually kind of fits right into it. The story goes, a snorkeler finds a wedding ring stuck on a fish.
Was the fish proposing?
No. It was a goldfish, though.
This sounds like the Little Mermaid story almost.
I want to know if the ring found the bride.
No. But it does look like somebody just made some random fish the happiest fish in the world. The snorkeler recently shared an unusual discovery she made during a recent trip underwater. According to her, it's not uncommon to see certain types of fish with various pieces of garbage stuck around their necks.
Which is sad.
It is. Recently, however, she came across a fish that was wearing a wedding ring. This Susan was snorkeling in Emily Bay, which is located on an island off the eastern coast of Australia. The People magazine reported, according to the environmental conservationist, she came across a sand mullet that had a gold ring around its neck. According to the snorkeler, sand mullets sort through the sand while looking for food. It's possible the particular fish swam through the wedding ring and got stuck on a body. It wasn't until she returned to land, however, that she remembered a post on a community social media page. Apparently, a man had recently lost his wedding ring in the same area. She was reportedly able to get in touch with the man, and they both believe that it's likely that the fish swimming around the water is the ring from the man.
Oh, she didn't bring it back?
Apparently, she couldn't net it fast enough.
Oh.
Apparently, Pryor is trying to relocate the fish, and along with a group of fishermen attempting to catch it with a net. Then she'd likely be able to remove the ring with a
fillet knife,
some sort of, yeah, something. And she said, there's no guarantee that any of this will work. So we will see if there's a wedding ring story.
Looking for a fish in the ocean.
Well, she found good luck.
Okay, so
yeah, good luck.
Imagine the story. Honey, where's your wedding ring? I lost it in the ocean. Honey, I don't believe you.
This lady saw it, so.
See?
You want a true story? I'm going back a ways now. Literally had in my, used to do a lot of water skiing and got in the boat. And at that time, I had a fairly large gold class ring on and didn't realize it came off. And, of course, it was missing for probably a year and a half, 2 years. And one year I'm washing the boat out and I have the plug. And the next thing you know is that it flushed the ring out of the bottom of the boat. I go, are you kidding me? It's in my safe now. That's pretty odd that would happen. Pretty fortunate.
I guess so.
Probably shouldn't be skiing with it on. Never
ring
skied
around the boat? Never. Is that what you call it? Ring around the boat?
Yeah, never skied with it on again.
I bet you didn't. Oh, my gosh.
But I haven't. So I haven't lost a ring in my life.
I got nothing on that one.
Yeah.
Right. It's all good. It's all
better
good.
To be lucky than good.
Yeah, there is that. Well, stay tuned. We'll be back with more Valley Outdoors right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Always like to have everybody check us out on Facebook and the Valley Outdoors. Big announcements coming.
Well, we're hoping to give you an opportunity on June 1st.
June 1. Big
June
change.
June 1.
Big a change.
So,
stuff. Yeah.
Going to be fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yep.
Speaking of big, Montana kind of teased it at the top of the show. Montana has now broken the 18-pound walleye barrier. How about that for a kick in the head?
That's bigger than Minnesota.
Yeah, it is. Montana anglers have landed 6 new state records, record fish, since last August.
What are they in, Fort Peck?
Well, let's just have to see. On May 10th, Trevor Johnson of Helena added the 7th whopper to the list when he reeled in a huge walleye from Holter Lake near Helena. That massive fish weighed in at 18.02 pounds on a certified scale, measured 32 and a quarter inches in length and 22 inches in girth, fatty, and maybe should mix in a salad or two. He caught the record-setting fish on the jig. The previous state record was set in 2007 when 17.75-pound fish from the Tiber Reservoir. And you can check out that kind of thing and more. I think we can have that on our website. You know, other recent state record fish include a Chinook salmon caught last August, smallmouth bass in October, yellow bullhead in December, brown trout in February, long-nosed sucker in March, and a largemouth bass in April. So they're dumping records all over the place.
Wow.
Pretty cool. Don't you think?
Don't you think that's kind of unusual that that many records would be broke in
a lot
one
more
year?
People fishing out there, though.
Evidently. Mm-hmm.
That's
which is good for the sport. I think
yeah.
This last year and a half is really the license sales have skyrocketed.
I'm anxious to see what the license sale number is for the Minnesota opener, for the Minnesota fishing.
For this year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and your surrounding states. So if you guys have any info on that, certainly feel free to give that to us at info. Can they get it to, at info?
Yes, info at thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Perfect. That's you can send us any tidbits or things you'd like us to research or check out or do for future stories on. It'll go right there. Out of North Dakota, they have a year-round game fish season.
Okay.
Yeah. Year-round game fish. Why is the question, right, Don?
Yeah.
North Dakota year-round game fish season is the topic. Of course, it's a big thing. Harvest a big fish in spring before walleye's northern pike have spawned is a common coffee shop topic. Some anglers wonder whether or not they should have been in closed season or alternately whether we should have some type of fish length restriction within North Dakota that would reduce the harvest of larger fish. Here's a little background. In 1993, North Dakota Game and Fish made a decision to have a year-round fishing season statewide. At the time, the Missouri system was open to walleye and pike harvest year-round, but the game fish season was closed in the rest of the state from mid-March to early May, and regulation is dated back to the 30s. Before implementing a year-round season, biologists evaluated pros and cons. At the time, the concern wasn't so much whether anglers would over-harvest pre-spawn fish, but whether eliminating a traditional fishing opener would dampen angler enthusiasm.
No, I don't think so.
Also, opening the harvest season from mid-March to early May would greatly increase shore fishing opportunities throughout the state for underutilized northern pike populations. In nearly two decades since then, the year-round season has been mostly well-received. Anglers like the extra opportunity, and biologically, any additional harvest of pre-spawn fish has not shown to be a detriment to any of the North Dakota fishing waters.
Interesting.
But every spring, and maybe this spring, because ahead of scheduled ice outs, we hear concerns from anglers who witness or see pictures of people keeping some big, heavy, egg-bearing female pike or walleye caught from lake shores, below dams, or in constructed rivers or channels. While these are potential producers, these fish, we all know there are far more than are not being caught, and each having the potential to provide tens of thousands of eggs, it's basically a numbers game for fish. True. For the most part, a stringer full of big walleye or pike taken before spawning run may make anglers look like some game hogs in the eyes of some people, but it doesn't hurt the fishery any more than catching and keeping those same fish during Memorial Day weekend.
So you don't think it would be beneficial for them to spawn?
Keep in mind, we're throwing this out there.
Yeah.
Something to chew on.
Keep throwing.
That's as long as that's said, experimental and restrictive regulations are always an option if it appears that there is a need, and regulations can be fairly evaluated in a manner that produces reliable results, so we know it was the right thing to do for the fishery in the long term. Fishery biologists annually assess the adult fish populations and reproduction on major waters, and the North Dakota Game and Fish monitors fishing success through creel surveys as well. The findings are essential in determining whether regulation changes are needed. It's a good thing to have concerned anglers and hunters who ask the department through electronic communication or otherwise for more restrictions when they believe our resources may be threatened. While space limits hinder further deepening of the conversation than the topic in this particular story, there are more details available on gamefishnorthdakota.gov and the fishing. So
check it out.
What are your thoughts on that, Don?
I'm of the opinion that I think it's hard for me to believe that it's not detrimental to the fishery when you're pulling pre-spawn fish out. It's just my nature, or you know, whether or not I have no idea what the numbers hold up there. I mean, if they're saying that it doesn't matter, I find that hard to imagine, but.
I would have to disagree with the statement as well. I know from a higher harvest rate and what goes on within certain bigger fisheries or targeted fisheries such as the river in Mississippi, that's, you know, this area within
right
Minnesota
here.
On the river, border water, it's year-round open.
Right.
And boy, do we get people coming down here. And that's why they instituted the 4-fish 1 over 20 that has not been in effect. And the regulations hadn't changed since 1950.
Right. I think it will have a positive impact over the next century.
I think it's going to have a positive effect in the next 5 years.
Yes.
I'll be honest with you. And that's going to be a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So although I hate blanket restrictions, I think if you're able to have a targeted slot, one that's able to have proven benefits, or it's going to allow a certain portion of the fish to survive, I think that's excellent. And then right now, in this case here, the 1 over 20 prevents a lot of those bigger saugers that were being caught before.
On the other hand, if you just had 6 weeks of closed season, we experience a lot of fishing rigs here in the early spring by the hundreds. And, you know, people ask me, you know, about fishing here on the opener. I go, it's probably the best time to go.
Nobody's here.
Because nobody's here. They've all, you know,
they go to the rest of the state and go fishing in whatever their favorite lake is.
Yep.
Prior to that, when all the rest of the lakes are frozen solid, there's nothing open, everybody's here. Yeah. I love to see it. It's awesome.
I understand it because a lot of people are getting their new boats and they want to get out and get it all tested out and use it and fish with it.
Or even, Donald, even just people wanting to go out and catch fish because they know this is an amazing fishery.
Yep.
Or they're here. Pier is an amazing fishery. I mean, that thing is incredible. But when you're dealing with this whole scenario where you get people that are coming in and from outstate and they don't get it and they're, hey, big or small, club them all kind of thing, it gets kind of a problem. So I think it's a good thing. All right, we are going to be back with more. We're going to talk a little bit about Midwest bear population and looks like those guys are snowbirds. They're moving south. Be back shortly. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Well, we always have those nice discussions, don't you think, Don?
Absolutely.
Ava?
That's what we're here to do.
I know. A little banter. Friendly little banter.
Yeah.
Banter and conversations.
Feel free to share your thoughts on Facebook.
Yep, exactly. We have no problem with that whatsoever, and we welcome that. Speaking of welcoming, apparently the Midwest black bear population is being welcomed into Iowa.
Iowa?
Yeah. Pretty good chance in the next several weeks, Northeast Iowa will be visited by a few wandering bears coming down from Minnesota and Wisconsin ahead of the breeding season, which is an annual occurrence in the region since spring of 2014. While much of Iowa does not have the habitat necessary to support a black bear population, certain locations do, primarily the northeast, eastern, and southern parts of the state. As black bear populations in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Missouri are stable to increasing, it's possible that small population could set up residence in Iowa. Corn-fed, you know.
I don't think it's that far-fetched, to be honest. Having come from the Martin County area, they're on record having them down there as well, which is a few miles from Iowa.
So. Yeah. Well, in the next 3 to 5 years, they're going to be expecting to see cubs showing up and a small breeding population becoming established in Iowa. If that occurs, we look back at the neighbors in Wisconsin and Minnesota have learned to live with bears, says this gentleman named Vince. He's a fur bearer and wetland wildlife research biologist with the Iowa DNR. It won't be perfect, and there will be bumps along the way, but we need to start having a conversation about the idea the bears are coming back to Iowa and at least certain places along the Mississippi River and in northeast Iowa where suitable habitat exists. Wisconsin's black bear population is estimated at close to 30,000. Minnesota's 15,000. Missouri, which is holding its first bear hunt later this fall, could be as many as 1,000. Wisconsin's black bear population is estimated at close to 30. That's a big number. For example, Wisconsin, with many black bears, residents have learned to make a few adjustments to minimize bear conflicts, like putting away their bird seed in spring, putting away their barbecue drip pans, and by keeping pet food and garbage in places the bears can't access. Good safety tips, Don.
Yeah, all right. Smart.
There are still occasional problems, but these basic precautions result in fewer negative encounters between bears and humans.
I just had a friend from Spencer, Iowa, just today, posted a video of a black bear in his neighborhood.
So, yeah, they're down in, that's in northwestern Iowa.
They're there?
Yep.
Right now, the statement is they're like big raccoons, motivated by hunger and willing to take advantage of whatever food's available. So that's an important aspect of it. Black bears are native to Iowa. That's the one thing I think that's important. However, they've been without a resident bear population for more than 100 years. So kind of a interesting piece of information there. While the Iowa DNR does not regulate bears, it does have a protocol bear response. The objective within the response protocol is to provide guidance for our staff in dealing with any potential bear-human conflicts, should they arise, and to be proactive with a strategy to increase the odds for better outcome for both the bears and humans. Good call. Since 2002, there have been 43 confirmed black bears in Iowa and 2 to 5 per year since 2014, and bears have become much more of a regular visitor. The chance encounter with a bear, however, is small possibility.
Not for my friend.
Not.
They're more dangerous than a raccoon, too, though, so don't mess with them.
Don't be confused.
No. Yep, all he said in his post was, well, time to go inside.
Yep.
He liked that woman that went down in the outhouse and sat down and had the bear.
Yes, in the outhouse.
Almost bite a chunk out of her hand.
I know. He was down in it. Yes.
Down inside there.
I remember that story.
Ugh. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Don, I know we talked about this in our break. This is a crazy story. And it may be something that happens down the pipe here. As human interaction and game populations are affected, this story, a bill is to kill up to 90% of Idaho wolves is heading to the governor. The Idaho House on Tuesday approved the legislation allowing the state to hire private contractors and expand methods to kill wolves roaming Idaho. Lawmakers voted 58-11 to send to the agricultural industry-backed bill to Republican Governor Brad Little. The fast-track bill that allows the use of night vision equipment to kill wolves as well as hunting from snowmobiles and all-terrain vehicles, among other measures, passed the Senate last week. Backers said the change to Idaho law could help cut the wolf population from about 1,500 to 150, alleviating wolf attacks on cattle, sheep, and wildlife. Don, that's a pretty big deal. We have areas of the state where the wolves are having a real detrimental impact on our wildlife, said House Majority Leader Mike Moyle, one of the bill's sponsors. They are hurting the elk herds, they're hurting deer herds, and this in particular regulation allows the Wolf Depredation Control Board and others to take control, which they have not done in the past. Cattle and sheep ranchers say wolves have cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars by killing animals or harassing them, causing them to lose weight, making them less valuable when they are sold. Opponents of the legislation say that it threatens 2002 wolf management plan involving the federal government that could ultimately lead to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service taking back control, managing the state's wolves. Environmental groups, of course, blasted the House approval of the measure and called on the governor to veto the legislation. The bill would waste millions of dollars in public funds on killing wolves and threatening to ultimately return the species to the endangered list and federal management, said the Watershed Project individual. And about a dozen other environmental groups said in a statement. Primary change in the new law is hiring private contractors to kill the wolves. The legislation includes increasing the amount of money for the Idaho Department of Fish and Game that they send to Idaho Wolf Depredation Control Board from $110,000 to $300,000. The board created in 2014 is an agency within the governor's office and manages state money if it receives need to kill wolves. The Idaho Department of Fish and Game reported in February that the wolf population has been holding at about 1,500 the past 2 years. Numbers are derived from remote cameras and usages. 500 wolves have been killed in the state each of the last 2 years, which that means they've definitely got a growth. They're killing 500 of them. They're still maintaining 1,500. And, yeah, that's interesting. There's about 15 packs of them within that area. So,
I'm surprised they would do it with private contractors versus just asking about 400 hunters from Wisconsin to come out to take care of it in a couple of days.
There you go.
I think it's a little safer that way. It's a little bit safer. Speaking of safer, now that we're done, you're all a lot more safer from the radio airwaves than listening to us. It's all about segues, isn't it? It's all about segues. Hope you guys join us next week when Valley Outdoors returns. I don't know what's going to be on, but it's going to be good. In fact, we are actually going to have on. Who are we going to have on? Chase Parsons. He was the winner of the National Walleye Tour out in Missouri. We're going to have him on next week, so stay tuned for that next week when we return. Thanks much, guys. Bye.